WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins from WFAE's DNC headquarters in Spirit Square. Last night, Charlotte Mayor Anthony Fox had his big moment on stage at the Democratic National Convention. The Jackson 5 played as he walked to the podium.
Welcome to the Democratic National Convention in 2012 in Charlotte, North Carolina. Our city is a hub of energy and commerce. A place where business and government work together and make great things happen. In this election, we are also a city where Americans have come together to move our country forward and make great things happen.
Earlier in the day, Mayor Fox was probably getting updates on how protests were going uptown. Things got a little intense.
Give Obama prison time! Drone strikes are war crimes!
Police officers stacked three rows deep stepped in. The march did not follow the designated parade route, nor did the protesters turn around when confronted. Instead, they sat in the middle of an intersection. Vietnam veteran Ed Hunt of Asheville wasn't happy.
I think it sucks. I gave up my leg so everybody can have their First Amendment right. Why do we have to go to a cage for free speech?
WFAE's Julie Rose will join us later in the program to talk about yesterday's protests, their causes, and how police handled them. We'll also hear from entrepreneurs hoping to make a buck on this convention with creative products and slogans.
Some of them say Obama 2012. One says, once you vote black, you never go back.
And there are a lot of parties, and groups pay lots of money on these parties, hoping to influence the powerful people who attend them. The Sunlight Foundation is keeping track.
You're not likely to be making a specific ask if you are a lobbyist of a governor at these events. It's just sort of tacky, I guess. But you are able to really ingratiate. If you're a lobbyist, you can ingratiate yourself with these folks.
Most of the people in attendance at the Democratic National Convention are delegates. They come from all over the country. And, of course, both North and South Carolina have their own delegations. We're going to spend a few minutes with a delegate from both states. Sam Spencer is the president of the Young Democrats of North Carolina, the oldest Young Democrats chapter in America. He was on the program just a few weeks ago in advance of the convention. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Let me turn your mic on. Now you can say good morning.
Good morning.
There you go. And Brady Quirk Garvin is a South Carolina delegate to the convention. He's been politically active since college and also works with several nonprofits and NGOs. Thank you for being here as well.
Mike, thanks so much for having me this morning.
Now, where are you this morning, Brady?
This morning, we are just finishing up our delegation breakfast, the South Carolina delegation, and then we'll be heading into town to attend caucus meetings and start the convention process.
Okay, we'll talk about what goes on in these caucus meetings. I ran into you, Sam, yesterday on the floor of the convention before the convention actually started, and I thought I had recorded it, but I didn't. You were leading a chant for the North Carolina delegation. It was like the big speech that you give, the big rah-rah you give in the locker room before the players hit the field. What was that chant? Do you remember?
Fired up, ready to go.
And they responded, of course, in kind. You know, one of the things that some of the people were commenting on that I was watching on television last night was the energy level in the arena. And they were comparing it to the energy level in the Republican convention and saying that the energy level here is a lot higher. There's more enthusiasm than they noticed at the GOP convention, and that people, the delegates assembled there, were actually listening to the non-prime time speeches. Did you find that to be the case, Brady?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it was an exciting experience to be there. And I think the great part about yesterday was, I mean, right out of the bat, they hit with some great speakers. I mean, Mayor Fox was wonderful. And then to have Cory Booker was just wonderful. You know, it was, they put some rising stars in the party in early. And I think people took attention at that. You know, they wanted to listen and hear what these people had to say, because they'll be continuing to be leaders in our party for years to come.
Well, you know, the picture that was painted, Sam, before this convention was the Democrats were dispirited. They had a lot of dog paddling to do to catch up to the enthusiasm of 2008, and it was never going to happen. And from what we saw yesterday, the reaction to the speeches, the intent, the attention being paid to the speakers who were not in prime time, seem to indicate that there's more of an undercurrent of let's get this thing done.
Everybody's really excited to have the convention here. And you know, when I go around and talk to delegates, when I go around to talk to people who are here in Charlotte, whether they're from news crews, Oklahoma delegates, or even last night I asked Chuck Todd, you know, how do you think of what we're doing here in Charlotte? You know, are you enjoying the city? And I have heard nothing but positive things. It's so gratifying to, you know, be a part of the North Carolina delegation, be hosting this convention, and having so many people say so many great things about our city.
Well, they're not going to say bad things. We just lost Sam, I think. We'll have to get him back. But they're not going to say bad things about North Carolina and Charlotte to a North Carolina delegate, are they?
Well, most of the time they don't know I'm a North Carolina delegate. We had that conversation afterward. But but you know, I can tell you the excitement level from the North Carolina delegation was high the entire time. We were up on our feet more often than not. I know Anthony got an amazing reception, and it's just so so great to see Mayor Fox up there. You know, after he you know, I knew Mayor Fox from his first political campaign for city council back in 2005. And, you know, so the best always rises to the top, and he did a great job last night.
Delegates from all over the country started arriving over the weekend. I know that there are some people from South Carolina who came from far away. There are some people from North Carolina who came from far away, because it's a long drive from the coast to Charlotte. When did your two delegations begin assembling in Charlotte, and what have you been doing up until last night, Brady?
Well, I arrived Sunday evening, and we had some delegates arrive Saturday, and some couldn't arrive till Monday. And, you know, what we've been doing is a great thing. We've been meeting with delegates from other states, and it's really a great sort of unity process for the Democratic Party to find out what people in other states are doing, and for us in South Carolina, talk with other Democrats about how we might be able to flip South Carolina into a blue state. And so it's just been a great networking opportunity and a learning process for us.
They say it's going to be closer in North Carolina than perhaps South Carolina, that the president is going to really try to flip this state back into the blue again this year, as he did in 2008. Mm-hmm. What do you think the chances of that happening, Sam, will be?
I think they're great. The last public policy poll showed a 48-48 tie. The convention's been going great. We've been getting, you know, just so much excitement out of it that I think that it's really going to boost the president, at the very least, in North Carolina. Now, we know that so many voters have decided at this point. We have more decided voters than we're used to having. So conventions aren't going to move the dial as much as they might have in the past. However, even though we saw no appreciable bump from the RNC, the way things are going so far, and especially the way that you know, Mayor Castro and the First Lady brought it home last night, I think we've got the potential to make this into a big thing for North Carolina.
Not only Mayor Castro, but Deval Patrick. I think he almost eclipsed the keynote speaker with what he had to say last night and the way he said it. How was that received on the floor by the delegates assembled there?
So you're going to have to go to South Carolina on this one, because I'll give you a little secret of what we do. I was in a pass swap when Governor Patrick went up there. So I was helping some people who were up in the nosebleeds get on the floor for our delegation, so I didn't see it.
Okay. Go ahead, Brady, fill us in.
I think he was fantastic. You know, he brought the kind of message that delegates wanted to hear. You know, he brought a message of unity, and you know, when he talked about Democrats standing up and having a backbone, I think that's what you're finding the Democratic Party is doing this year. You know, we are unified and together, and that's a wonderful thing, and I think you really brought that message home for us.
I got to tell you that there are a lot of parts of that speech that I thought were really interesting, but that's the key phrase. Democrats need to get a backbone. I think that's what he said. And that's something that we've heard uttered by Democrats and by frustrated Democrats for years. Why have they suddenly struck upon that as a good idea after all these years of kind of backing down occasionally?
Well, I think one of the things we can say about Governor Patrick is that he has been speaking at a lot of party dinners. He's been going around the country helping, helping rally parties across the country. And so he's been going to a lot of these party activists around the 50 states. And one of the things that you gain from that experience is that you know what Democrats are responding to. And I think that Democrats across the country really have the mentality now that, you know what, we're in a strong position. We have the president who has been strong on national security, and a lot of Americans trust Democrats more on national security right now than they trust Republicans. So why not be muscular? Why not stand up and get that spinal transplant that people have been talking about for years?
Sam Spencer is a delegate from North Carolina to the convention. Brady Garvin is a delegate from South Carolina. Both of you came to us this morning from your respective breakfasts for your state delegations, and there are caucus meetings throughout the day. What goes on at the breakfasts? What goes on in these caucus meetings? Who comes to speak? What's the function of these meetings? Brady.
Well, for us South Carolinas, you know, in the primary process is an early state, and so we've been getting some interesting people that, believe it or not, are possibly already thinking about 2016 coming. So they come and they talk about what they've been doing in their state and give a little bit of biographical information. And it's a great chance for delegates to hear from national speakers and people from different states. So it's just a wonderful opportunity for delegates.
Sam?
Also, a lot of what we've been doing here in North Carolina is we've been highlighting, you know, who are the members of the delegation, different components of the delegation. We've been highlighting congressional members. This morning, Walter Dalton was the speaker at the North Carolina delegation breakfast, at least according to Twitter, because I wasn't there. But
he's running for governor, isn't he?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
But you know, it's an opportunity and a platform for somebody like Lieutenant Governor Dalton to speak to the media, to get his story out to local press, because, you know, press comes to these breakfasts, covers these speeches, covers the avails afterward, and it's a really good opportunity for the delegation and for the state party to get its message out there.
I know that you'll be voting on the nominee, and you know, it's a pro forma vote. You're going to renominate the president. You're going to vote on the platform. You're giving me maybe not.
No. We voted on the platform last night.
Okay.
So we passed the platform.
Okay.
We passed the rules. That all happened very quickly last night. Cory Booker gave a very strong speech last night, and you know, on every now and then when you have these pro forma votes, these votes where we know what the outcome's going to be, every now and then you hear a couple nays, you hear a couple nos in the audience, you know, people trying to be funny. But after Cory gave that speech moving to accept this platform, there were all yays, and I did not hear a single person trying to be funny in the crowd.
What is then the work of the convention and of the delegates? If the platform is a fait accompli when you arrive, the rules are pretty much passed without objection, we know who the nominee is going to be coming into this, how do you spend your time as delegates to this convention, Brady?
Well, you know, I think part of it is listening to speeches by those who are, you know, up on stage. And a lot of this is about rallying excitement among activists and the delegates so that for the next 60 days when we go back home, you know, as Sam said earlier, you know, we're fired up, we're ready to go. We're ready to go knock on doors both in South Carolina and come up to North Carolina. You know, we're going to make sure that we reelect President Obama. And, you know, these past few days and the next few days are all about, you know, rallying our troops so that we're ready to finish the job and reelect President Obama when we go back home.
The GOP platform contained a number of planks that some consider controversial. Your platform considers a plank in support of same-sex marriage, which also many people find controversial. What do you see as the most progressive plank in the platform, since you're the progressive party?
Well, I think the plank you just mentioned is very progressive. Obviously, we're talking about moving the country forward. I think the Democratic platform taken as a whole, though, that's the theme. That's the, you know, bringing us forward, bending that arc of history a little bit forward. And I think that's a major difference between our platform and theirs.
Well, when Deval Patrick spoke about Democrats developing a backbone, it seems to me that you have embraced this platform out front and unabashedly and unashamedly. I mean, every single speaker last night talked about being able to marry the person you love. Every single speaker in primetime.
And I think that's a key component of what we're doing. The Democrats are the party that stands for equality of opportunity, and that's equality of opportunity, whether it's for a job, whether it's, you know, whatever color your skin is, whatever your gender is. It's making sure that women get paid the same amount. It's making sure that women don't get charged more just because being a woman is a pre-existing condition. And it means allowing every person in America to have the civil rights that they deserve and the dignity that they deserve as human beings.
Brady?
And I completely agree with everything that Sam said, and I think part of it is, you know, the Democratic Party is on the right side of history here. You know, they were on the right side when it came to, you know, bringing women's pay up, and that's why President Obama passed the Lilly Ledbetter Act. And I think what you're seeing here is something that 10, 20 years from now, we'll look back and wonder sort of why it took us so long to get here. But I think what one of the great parts about being a Democrat is that we're on the right side of history here about providing people more civil rights, not taking them away from people.
But do you think it will that it could hurt you at the polls in November?
I don't think so, only because people are really looking for a leader. And when you look at President Obama, he's delivered on the promises that he laid out 4 years ago. He's laid out some more promises for the next 4 years, and I think he'll do that Thursday evening. And I think people are wary of Mitt Romney. You know, they're not sure sort of what he'll do. There's this flip-flop notion that's in everyone's head, and I think people want a strong leader, and if you want a strong leader, that's President Barack Obama.
The First Lady spoke last night. She was the big star last night, and First Ladies didn't used to speak at conventions, so it's been a short history of First Lady speeches, but of the First Lady speeches that have been made, this strikes me as the best ever in every way. She looked like a professional out there, a professional politician, although she was telling a non-political story. How fired up was the crowd as she just walked out? I mean, it was amazing when she walked out.
There were tears and eyes across our delegation, and maybe, just maybe, some of our bigger members of the delegation might have teared up a little bit too.
You're pretty tall. So do you think it played, though, across America? It certainly played in the House.
I think it absolutely did. You know, I talked with a couple people back home this morning, and one person told me, they said it was personal and real, but it was filled with substance. You know, it was that impressive sort of walking both lines of telling her personal narrative and why, you know, she is so excited about reelecting her husband. But it also it had some substance to it and some policy, and that was just an amazing mix last night. I think that played really well back home.
Both of you are Democrats. Both of you are delegates to this convention, but you're Democrats from states where we're kind of purple in North Carolina and it's pretty red in South Carolina. Why are you Democrats, and what does it feel like to kind of swim against the tide with your peers? Brady?
Well,
I mean,
I'm proud to be a Democrat because I believe that, you know, we need to stand up for everyone. Last night there was a lot of talk about opportunity, and I think that's what at our heart, that's what Americans believe, that you should be given the opportunity to succeed. And that's why I'm a Democrat, because I think that's what the Democratic Party fights for. And in terms of swimming uphill, you know, you work with the cards that you have, and I think, you know, we're excited about making sure our friends in North Carolina help reelect the president, and we're doing what we can in South Carolina to win on some local races.
Sam?
You know, for myself and a lot of other millennials, it's about service. It's about a lifetime of service. And I think one of the biggest moments for a lot of us last night was seeing a video with Senator Kennedy outlining everything he accomplished, outlining all of the accomplishments that Barack Obama had that extended that record of accomplishment. And also, frankly, just seeing a very muscular, very fired-up Ted Kennedy kick Mitt Romney's butt back in 1994.
Yeah, there was a video that you folks played at your convention last night that was a tribute to Ted Kennedy, and it's part of that video. There was a debate between the senator and between Mitt Romney, who was running for senator, I think, in Massachusetts at the time, and many of the same issues that are being discussed in this campaign were being discussed in that campaign, and what it highlighted was that Mitt Romney has flip-flopped on most of those issues.
Well, as they said in the video, and even though it's 18 years old, you know, the biggest line from Senator Kennedy from the video was that, you know, you're not pro-choice, you're multiple choice.
So you're optimistic. What are you looking forward to for the rest of the convention? Bill Clinton speaks tonight.
Absolutely. You know, let me tell you, Bill Clinton is the only – I've met all of these people in politics at this point. Bill Clinton is the only person I've met where if you enter a room with him, he has this aura, this metaphysical je ne sais quoi that it's captivating and it holds the entire room in rapt attention. It's amazing, and I can't wait to see him speak tonight.
Brady?
I think Bill Clinton's going to be fantastic. It's always great to have a former president, and I think mostly, though, I'm looking forward to Thursday evening to be surrounded by 65,000 other Obama supporters. I think that's going to be a great event, and I think it highlights, you know, why we need to go reelect the president, and I think it's going to be a great experience.
I don't mean to spoil the party, but what if it rains?
You know, if it rains, we're Democrats, we're tenacious, and we will proceed. You know, I don't know all the details of a rain contingency plan, but I think we're all here. We're in Charlotte. We're ready to reelect the president, and we'll listen to him accept our nomination, rain, shine, or whatever.
Brady Quirk-Garvin is the delegate from South Carolina. Sam Spencer is the delegate from North Carolina and the president of the Young Democrats of North Carolina. Thank you for your time this morning. Have a good rest of your convention.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. One of the reasons the DNC came to Charlotte was to help woo North Carolinians to pull the lever in November for President Obama. He carried the state in 2008 by just 14,000-some votes, and this election support from the Tar Heel state may be extremely important. But not everyone can be won over. This week, we reached out to some conservative leaders in our region to find out what they think of the convention coming to Charlotte, and we start with John Hood, president of the John Locke Foundation, a conservative think tank in Raleigh.
It's obvious that Democrats decided to go with the Charlotte convention because they wanted to try to have the event make North Carolina more competitive for Democrats in the fall. I'm not sure that strategy is going to end up really succeeding. The problem is that North Carolina's economy has performed so much worse than the rest of the country that we are a much less hospitable place for the president to make his pitch than was true 4 years ago. I do think that the convention will create excitement and enthusiasm among the Democratic base in North Carolina. I'm not sure that that will make a big difference in the fall outcomes. It certainly won't hurt. The one way the convention could hurt is if there are any kinds of protests or events that become distractions from the Democratic message. The convention will give the city some publicity. Based upon past experience, Charlotte should not expect to generate some sort of huge economic bonanza. Some businesses and individuals will make money. Some will lose money during the convention, particularly if they have stores that typically cater to downtown commuters and downtown workers who might not be around during convention week. It might be a bit of a wash for them or even a net loss. So all in all, what I would say is the Democratic Convention in Charlotte, if it goes according to plan, ought to offer a modest boost for Democratic efforts in North Carolina. I'm not sure that'll be enough to carry North Carolina for the president again, but you have to put it somewhere. You might as well put it in a state that you hope to win but are not guaranteed to win.
Larry Shaheen, Jr., chairman of the Mecklenburg County Young Republicans. I was actually at an event last evening with Mayor Van Root and the Young Democrats and the Go Charlotte Young Professionals Group, along with the Charlotte City Club Young Professionals. And my comments on the DNC are simply this. I think that any opportunity to showcase Charlotte on the world stage and give Charlotte an opportunity to grow and expand and share the message that we've had over the last few years is a fantastic opportunity. I'm extremely excited that the DNC is here. I'm always pleased that people come and choose Charlotte because it is a world-class, first-class city. I'm a native Charlottean and will always love this city. That being said, I do think that the DNC is going to showcase the flaws and faulty operations of this current administration, and that I think that even though the folks at the DNC think that coming here is going to help them win North Carolina, I believe that once the moderately conservative Democrats that make up the majority of the swing voters in North Carolina are going to see that the policies of this administration are not in their best interest.
Gideon Moore, chairman of the MEC GOP, the Mecklenburg Republican Party. As for the DNC coming to town, on one side, we're happy because it shows that we've got a target on our back in between 2004 and 2008. They moved the Dummers more in Mecklenburg County from the Democratic side than they did even in the city of Denver. And so we would have been targeted no matter what. But the fact that the DNC is here, that gives us the benefit of being able to broadcast to everybody that this is clearly an important county for winning in 2012. On the other side of things, it also, I think it's an example of Democratic leadership. We've got Democratic leadership in the city and in the county and currently in the state and nation. And all of those levels we're feeling right now, and especially on the job side. North Carolina is at 10%. The unemployment rate in Charlotte is still far too high and above where it should be. And as far as being an exhibit of the need for jobs in the economy and getting the economy back going again, on one level, having it in Charlotte is an example of the fact that they failed and that we need new leadership at every level.
Daniel Rufty, I'm a delegate in North Carolina. 12th District is what I represent. My take on the DNC is that a lot of taxpayers' money is being wasted on these conventions. The security details on these things are completely outrageous and way, way over the top. And those are taxpayer-funded police officers, taxpayer-funded Secret Service, taxpayer-funded Homeland Security. I mean, I'm down here at the RNC. I feel like I'm in Baghdad. This is outrageous. They have tanks. They have armed guards, horses. They probably had 100 protesters out there. There was probably 500 police officers. These conventions are ridiculously over the top on the security. I felt like I was a prisoner. Police officers were searching you, scanning you, all kinds of stuff. And there was no need for that. I don't think you should ever sacrifice one of your liberties for security. And I think that's my take on the DNC and also the RNC.
Bill James, Mecklenburg County Commission, Republican, District 6. I hope that the Democrats have a great time in Charlotte, North Carolina. I hope they spend a lot of money and don't have much left over for the election. And I certainly hope the Republicans win in November because I think we need a change. I would also like to point out there have been all sorts of reports of issues with Charlotte's hotels, delegates and stuff having problems. One group had a problem with bed bugs. And I would just like to say that I appreciate the president and the first lady staying in District 6 and not in Uptown, because that certainly adds to the bottom line of the people out in Valentine.
As you heard, Bill James speculates that the president will be staying in Valentine, where apparently bed bugs are not an issue. Just a few opinions of conservative voices in our area and their take on the DNC. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Thanks for listening to Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source. Stay with us for more Charlotte Talks, special coverage on the DNC in Charlotte, and remember to stay with WFAE throughout the day. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Concerts, presenting its season, featuring the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, Ray Chen, the China National Symphony Orchestra, and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. CharlotteConcerts.org.
We're back from our Spirit Square DNC headquarters on Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The first official day of the DNC also brought the first test of the city's designated free speech opportunities. It also proved the first test of the CMPD's ability to handle protesters unwilling to stick to the city's script. The protesters sat down at an intersection for 2.5 hours when police wouldn't let them proceed down the street that they wanted to take. But the standoff ended peacefully. The protesters' cause was a man named Bradley Manning. He's the soldier charged with leaking secret government documents to WikiLeaks. And WFAE's Julie Rose followed the protesters and joins us now. What got them so upset?
They're walking, as you mentioned, in support. It was a Free Bradley Manning march. We actually have a bit of sound here from one of the march ringleaders. His name is John Penley. He's a Vietnam veteran and an activist from Asheville. He's camping over at the Marshall Park Occupy area. And he was down in Tampa doing the same thing last week at the RNC. So here he is, Penley.
I've been told that you're supposed to expose war crimes. It's your duty as a soldier under international law. And Bradley Manning did that. He exposed a helicopter shooting down unarmed journalists in Baghdad, one of the first things that came out. And we support what he did. We think the American people have a right to know what their money is being spent on when it concerns the military and in wars and invasions of foreign countries.
So, you know, the military-industrial complex he talks about a lot. They were chanting, free Bradley Manning, arrest Barack Obama. Also talked about drone attacks that they're opposed to. And they want an end to the wars. They want an end to military spending and so forth. So about 200 folks left from Marshall Park around 12:30-ish yesterday. Now, they had completely rejected any notion of marching on the city's pre-approved parade route, which, incidentally, nobody showed up to march on yesterday. There were six groups signed up to do that. Nobody came. It's a route that kind of winds along Stonewall, stays several blocks from the convention. Just not interesting to people in this group, this 200, that wanted to be heard. So they marched without any trouble down some closed streets until they got to Stonewall, and they were trying to march right up into the heart of things. They wanted to go up Tryon, and they were blocked at that point. And that, like you said, I mean, they sat in that intersection and the police completely surrounded them. And it was really interesting to see the police. Basically, the chief was there. Here, these people were impeding traffic. It's illegal, obviously, to do that. And he said, hey, you know, we've redirected traffic. We're not in a hurry to arrest anybody. We're just going to see how this goes. It got tense. There was lots of yelling. But ultimately, the police let them go ahead as long as they stayed on the sidewalk.
People who have not been downtown during this convention may not understand that we have police from all over the country here. There were police from Atlanta and Philadelphia and Chicago directing traffic. D.C. We have police on horseback. We have police on bicycles. We have police on foot. We have police in vans and cars. They're everywhere, all over the place. But it does not feel like we're being threatened or warned from not doing it. It just feels normal down here, quite frankly.
I've been pretty struck. I've spent the last 3 days out on the street with these protesters and following their actions and the police action, and I've been really struck with how, I mean, the police are trying to just, whenever one of these actions happens, like last night after the convention got out, it happened the night before it happened, where there's a group of people that wants to get out and start expressing themselves. They kind of march into the street, or if it's a bigger thing like happened yesterday, the police are there instantly, outnumbering in many cases the protesters, but they're not there to sort of like force them back out of the street. They're just there to kind of make sure that they don't get hurt.
Right.
And, you know, this was the first sort of yesterday. It was the first time I had seen since the convention activities began on Saturday where they actually refused to let the protesters go where they wanted to go. So it was interesting to see what we would get from that. And in fact, so far during this whole thing, starting on Saturday, only 13 arrests have happened. One from that big march yesterday, 10 individuals from the UndocuBus, No Papers, No Fear immigration rights group, got arrested on purpose. I mean, they did a civil disobedience. They sat in an intersection last night, got arrested, and then there were three others.
We have to wrap this up. But did the protesters yesterday set the stage for something more aggressive today or tomorrow? Because this is more aggressive than anything that happened in Tampa.
You know, I think it empowered them yesterday. So we'll have to see. But there are... But part of the point is to be able to do stuff that's kind of unexpected for the police.
Right.
And so they don't talk an awful lot, but that Occupy encampment over there is growing daily. So, I mean, we'll see more of it. There are two more days. I suspect Thursday especially we'll see stuff.
WFAE's Julie Rose will keep her eye on the protest movement as we go through the rest of the week here. With thousands of people uptown for the Democratic National Convention, some street vendors would say that this is their best opportunity of the year. In fact, some have traveled across the country to make a quick buck in Charlotte this week, as WFAE's Michael Tomczyk reports.
If you've been uptown this week, you've seen them. People selling buttons, pins, t-shirts, programs, flags, you name it, all with some kind of logo featuring President Obama, the DNC, Charlotte, or even something off the wall. Kiera Thompson is one of the hustlers.
I'm just selling buttons right now. That's pretty much it. You can buy four, get one free, or you can get one for $5. It's just Obama buttons.
Would you describe some of them to me?
Some of them say Obama 2012. One says, once you vote black, you never go back.
She says that's one of the most popular ones. She lives in Charlotte and has a two-month-old at home. Her mom and dad are babysitting this week so she can make a quick buck. Or a lot of bucks. She says she made $40 her first 10 minutes. And here's what she's expecting to bring in.
Right now, probably about $4,000 within the week.
You think you're going to make $4,000 this week?
Mm-hmm. I'll be here day and night, just in 10 minutes, making $40. I mean, do the math.
That kind of opportunity drew people from out of town, too. Daniel Robertson is from High Point. He and a crew of about 15 guys have been selling programs day and night in Uptown.
We have the official program here. which tells about the events that are happening this week, and it also gives you a little information about Obama, his family.
What makes them official? Okay, it's one of those kind of things.
Robertson says a friend of his made them. They cost $5, and he's hoping to make about $1,000 this week. Another hustler is Leslie Ware. She lives in Charlotte and set up a booth at Carolina Fest to sell shirts, lanyards, and bags. But the thing she said was selling like hotcakes was a white t-shirt with the Charlotte skyline on top of the words, Run DNC. Her nephew and niece came up with the idea.
They thought Run DNC would be a great play on the rap group Run DMC. And it's the perfect number of letters, 3 and 3 on the top, 3 on the bottom. And then the Charlotte skyline just to represent for Charlotte.
When I saw her in the morning, the shirts were in stacks more than a foot tall. And then when I swung by in the afternoon, a few of those stacks were almost gone. Ware says the t-shirts were a hit.
I can't tell you how many people have come by and taken pictures, and we've had a couple people that have tweeted it and got feedback from folks they got tweets from.
Ware says she may use the money she makes off the shirts as capital for her budding real estate business. But she's having so much fun selling them, she says she may ditch real estate and stick with this kind of retail. In front of the Charlotte Convention Center, Claudia Blakemore set up her own little shop. She drove all the way here from Houston.
I have caps, and I have buttons. I also have some commemorative things from the inauguration. Coins, pens, tote bags, and flags.
But Blakemore isn't really here to make money.
Just really trying to recoup my expenses for coming to the convention and traveling over, because I'm kind of on vacation, you know. So if I can do that, I'm fine.
She's just selling souvenirs to fund her trip. She says in 2008, she drove all over the place doing this, debates, the Democratic convention, and the inauguration. And every time, she says her sales at least covered the cost of her trips. She's never come up short. She says she stumbled into funding vacations this way.
First I was a volunteer, then I tried to go as a delegate, and then people wanted t-shirts, so I said, well, I'll get a few shirts. And then it just kind of mushroomed from there. Everybody wanted shirts. I said, hey, wait a minute. This looks good. So I got 500 shirts that I sold to all, you know, so it just kept going like that.
She says most of the stuff she brought to Charlotte is left over from back then, and she sees the DNC as her last big chance to sell her way to a free trip. For WFAE News, I'm Michael Tomczyk in Charlotte.
Well, you know the DNC is in full swing by now. We're covering it. You're probably watching it on TV. You have a pretty good idea of what's happening at the official convention. But then there are the parties to which only certain people are invited, and certainly not the media. The Sunlight Foundation is keeping track of them, though, not for the celebrities, but to monitor the influence of corporations, special interest groups, and unions on lawmakers. The group is on the ground in Tampa. They're now here in Charlotte. WFAE's Duncan McFadden spoke with Keenan Steiner of the Sunlight Foundation about what corporate influence looks like at a convention touted to be free of corporate money.
I think what the Democrats discovered is that we're not really able to raise enough money to put on the show that we want to put if we're going to ban corporate money. There are all these other ways that they can get corporate donations and sort of still say to the public, oh, you know, we have a different kind of approach than the Republicans.
So does that detract from what they're trying to say, though, when it's like, oh, we're not taking the money, but we kind of are?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the corporate hypocrisy factor is high. They really couldn't put on all of these events without Google has an enormous space in downtown Charlotte, a big tent surrounded by shipping containers manufactured apparently locally here, repurposed, and it's gorgeous. And that kind of in-kind contribution makes Google an official sponsor. The host committee can still accept in-kind corporate donation. So AT&T providing, spending so much money to rebuild wireless capacity and so on. I mean, you have America's Natural Gas Alliance putting on shuttling delegates back and forth showing off the point of natural gas. So the point is there's corporations are here. They are benefiting the Democratic Convention, and yet the Democrats are saying, they're claiming that they don't have a relation to them in a way.
So I want to talk now about the parties. I was scrolling through your website, and there are like 12 pages of different events put on by various interests that are going on just during the 3 or 4 days of the DNC. You have sort of a party patrol, I understand?
We have a website called Political Party Time, where we aggregate all of the party invitations for both the convention and any political fundraiser happening in Washington or elsewhere. And we are focused on transparency, because that is our mission, is about open government. And nobody tracks the whereabouts when members are doing their own fundraising, or where lobbyists or companies are putting on parties that honor members of Congress. This is not required to be publicly disclosed in a meaningful way. So we try to do that.
And you actually try to go to some of these things, is that right?
We are. We have been labeled in Tampa, we were labeled the Salahis of Tampa. Salahis.
So how do you get in? They're pretty closed invitations, right? You can't just walk into something like this, can you?
You can't just walk in. One of the biggest bashes of the night was put on by the Democratic Governors Association. You need a ticket. We know somebody that was able to get us in. And
so is that how it usually works? You know somebody who knows somebody?
Exactly. But we first of all have to know the events going on, because you track the stuff we do. I think most people don't. This event was a 70s-themed party with go-go dancers in high white boots on tables. Seven governors, including Martin O'Malley, Bev Perdue of North Carolina, and others. Lobbyists, union folks, and a ABBA cover band at Mez, a local venue in the epicenter, which is going to be busy every day and every night with these parties.
Are there actual political conversations related to legislation that take place here, or is this just sort of let's all get together and have a good time, and then the hard sell from the lobbyists and the corporate interests comes later? How does that work?
Yeah, Duncan, the latter is where it is. You're not likely to be making a specific ask if you are a lobbyist of a governor at these events. It's just sort of tacky, I guess. But you are able to really ingratiate. If you're a lobbyist, you can ingratiate yourself with these folks. And then later on, you can use those connections, especially if you are giving money to the Governors Association. You are a big corporation. These Governors Associations take $500,000 from healthcare companies, oil and gas interests. And, you know, if you're a lobbyist for those folks, you have an easier in when you want to talk to a Martin O'Malley or a Bev Perdue. Easier in than maybe an average citizen would.
So what parties are you most looking forward to crashing this week?
We are looking forward to crashing the Super O'Rama party on Thursday, where Jessica Alba is hosting and her husband Cash Warren will be there. Maybe George Clooney will be here, because he supported that he's in town. It'll be performances by the Scissor Sisters and a band called Pitbull. And to get into this thing, though, you got to pay $25,000 or $100,000. It's to raise money for the Obama and Democratic super PACs. Unless you know somebody, which I'm trying to get an in there, it's going to be hard to get in. But that's the party of the week, Thursday night, after all the balloons drop.
Keenan Steiner, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Duncan.
WFA's Duncan McFadden with Keenan Steiner, professional party crasher and writer for the Sunlight Foundation. You can read his observations of the DNC party scene at politicalpartytime.org. Speaking of parties, the epicenter seems to be the place for a lot of celebrity parties. MSNBC has constructed its massive stage right in the middle of it. CNN has opened the CNN Grill. Those media outlets draw celebrities, and the clubs around epicenter do too. In fact, our own Tanner Latham was at a somewhat celebrity party yesterday. Is that right?
Exactly. Well, we heard in that last segment about all the parties that are closed, the media can't go to, except when they can. So the party that I went to yesterday was a total media party, and it was put on by Rock the Vote. They invited everybody in town, as far as the media was concerned, to come in and talk to the folks there about their organization. Now, the host of the party was Perez Hilton.
Who?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, now you say who. You say who.
I know who.
But he, of course, is the really snarky gossip columnist, blogger. He's got 5.5 million Twitter followers. He's a big deal. And for the Rock the Vote crowd, he is a big deal. And so they brought him in. They also brought in a band called the Far East Movement. Now, you might say who to them, too. They had a dance hit a couple of years ago called Like a G6. And they're pretty popular as well. We were ushered up to the VIP area of Mez, which is a club right there in Epicenter, and right. we were able to have these one-on-one interviews with Perez Hilton, with the Far East Movement, to talk about how they're attempting to further the cause of Rock the Vote. Now, I'm dressed up in my regular covering the DNC garb, which is just some lame shorts, white running shoes. You know, I was not ready to be part of the celebrity party. But talked to Perez for a while, and he's been having a good time here in Charlotte. And I asked him, what his experience has been so far here. And at this point, this is what he said.
What have you experienced here in Charlotte so far? You've probably not been in town
very
long.
I got in last night, and I experienced Wolf Blitzer in the gym, walking briskly on the treadmill.
Did you say hello?
No, I let him do his thing. But I did tweet about it.
Right. Makes a lot of sense, right?
A brush with celebrity. So who, were there other celebrities there besides you, I mean?
Yeah, exactly. There were no other celebrities there when I was there. Now, I left a little early. But the party was from noon until 6. And yeah. So it was hard to expect celebrities to be there at that time of day.
So maybe later at night.
Maybe later at night, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, at least he's trying to get the people to get out there, register, and later to vote, I
right,
suppose.
Right,
WFAE's Tanner Latham, enjoy your party scene tonight. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, presenting the new 2013 Subaru models, including the XV Crosstrek, an all-wheel drive crossover built for all-terrain and fuel efficiency. More information at TyndallSubaru.com. Don't forget, you can stay up on what's going on with the DNC in Charlotte this week on WFAE and on our website, WFAE.org. Thanks for tuning in, Charlotte's NPR news source, 90.7 WFAE.
It is Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Eric Heberling is back with us this morning, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNC Charlotte, and the man who every day this week is providing perspective to the political goings-on at the convention. And the political goings-on actually began yesterday with opening night, last night. I was in the arena yesterday afternoon at about 3 o'clock, and there was a palpable air of excitement in the air. Did it feel like that to you?
Yeah, we've heard a lot about how Democrats are dispirited, but I was surprised. This is the first time I've been in a hall for a convention, and my recollection of these, watching them on the media, is that there are a lot of empty chairs, particularly early in the evening, that there's a lot of talking. People really aren't listening. It was very full early in the evening. I think almost every seat was taken about 2 hours before prime time. People were listening. They were cheering at the right times. They were chanting. It was there was a lot of enthusiasm there last night.
You know, aside from the party atmosphere, do you find, as a teacher of political science, a professor of political science, that these four-year quadrennial elections that we go through increase the roles of students who are interested in taking political science?
Well, we've found that at UNC Charlotte this fall. I mean, it's been a terrific opportunity for our students to do field work, to do internships with the convention itself and the other organizations that are here.
Both Charlotte Mayor Anthony Fox and North Carolina Governor Bev Perdue had an opportunity to address the convention last night. Aside from welcoming delegates to North Carolina and to the city, what did they talk about?
Mayor Fox really didn't speak very long. He had a very short speech, but really tied together his personal experience, the values of Charlotte, and what makes Charlotte a working city. So he hit it out of the park last night.
Politico has called Fox one of North Carolina's rising star Democrats. Did his performance last night help propel him even further up into the
firmament? I think so. I mean, that was kind of the buzz going in. And you always fear as a politician to have high expectations because that makes it hard to beat them, and he beat them last night.
There was also a video about Charlotte that played, and it was remarkably good.
It was very good. I thought all the videos last night were very effective, but the Charlotte one was really professional.
The keynote address was given by San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro. Aside from his Hispanic heritage, why did they choose him?
He's an up-and-coming player. The Democrats see Texas as a state that's winnable for them in a decade or so with a growing Hispanic population. So it's a way of raising his profile both statewide and on a national level.
Did he hit the right notes in his keynote speech?
I think he did. It was kind of an indirect response to the Republicans' criticism of Obama's "You Didn't Build It" gaffe, talking about why it's important to invest in opportunity as a way of building future prosperity. I mean, that was his theme throughout the speech.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie gave the Republican a keynote. How did it compare to that?
I thought they were both good in their own way. Christie's was very much a reflection of his personal style. He didn't mention Romney very much. I thought Castro was much better at promoting the general Democratic themes and selling the Obama record.
Was Governor Deval Patrick the big surprise last night?
I don't know if he was a big surprise. He certainly had a big speech, got a lot of enthusiasm out of the audience. Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, who was early in the evening, also got a huge ovation and had a lot of enthusiasm during his speech. A couple that I wouldn't have expected, there was a student from Colorado who spoke early in the evening and a firefighter from Cincinnati, so kind of ordinary people who just gave fantastic speeches.
And the woman who introduced Michelle Obama, who has 4 sons in the military, 1 in high school, waiting to be in the military, and she has them in every branch of the military. She gave a very nice speech about how wonderful the president and the first lady have been to veterans.
And it was a very personal, very heartfelt thing that she was absolutely believable as just this average mother who wrote to the first lady and got an invitation to the White House. And it was nice in terms of it very much fit with that maternal, that family-oriented speech that Mrs. Obama gave.
The first lady came out, was a knockout in every way last night, in my opinion. I thought Ann Romney did a great job giving the speech about her husband, but Mrs. Obama was remarkable.
Yeah, earlier this evening you said it was probably the best speech ever by a first lady at a convention. And
It seemed genuine and heartfelt and not acted and not almost impromptu, but it was.
I mean, it was extremely well written. She wove together the themes of her upbringing, her husband's upbringing, their relationship, their current family, his decisions as president. I mean, it was a really ambitious speech, but seemed so natural. And she delivered it. She was emotional, but very natural in giving it.